reconvene. Your silence is commanded.
Please be seated. Marsha Pond, is Justice Abrahamson on the phone? Did she say anything? I mean, she's been on the phone the last two hearings, but we haven't heard a peep.
I am on the phone.
Okay, good. Good, okay. So, if you hear a voice from above, it could be Justice Abrahamson. Are you prepared to proceed? Please do.
Good afternoon. My name is Brian Malarski. I am the pro se petitioner in this matter. I'd like to thank the court for giving me the opportunity to be heard here today as part of my petition for reinstatement. I'd actually also like to thank Attorney Hendricks and the Office of Lawyer Regulation, specifically for the level of respect that they have shown me through this process. It was certainly appreciated. The knee-jerk reaction from family, friends, former colleagues, the idea of appearing pro se today was met with horror, to say the least. The reality is, obviously, it's not in my budget to have counsel, but if I did, I would still be here today pro se. I personally feel that I am the best person to explain my actions and my plan moving forward. Beyond my own voluntary revocation, my actions took me down a path of criminal charges, a guilty plea in Milwaukee County, and ultimately a sentence to 5 years of probation, which included 12 months at the Milwaukee County House of Corrections with Huber conditions as a condition of my probation. I embarrassed my family, my children, my parents, my former spouse. I also embarrassed this court and my former colleagues by giving at least a portion of the community are just another reason to criticize lawyers and dishonesty, with good reason. I appear today with no excuses, no justification, no blame for anyone but myself. Instead, I just bring my own regrets and accountability. Since the day I was called by Detective Chaperone at Milwaukee Police, I have done nothing but take responsibility for my actions at every phase of this process. I cooperated with police departments. I cooperated with the district attorney's office. I cooperated with probation. I felt as though I cooperated with the Office of Lawyer Regulation to the best of my abilities through this process. There has never been a time where I have not taken complete responsibility for my unethical actions dating back to my own petition for voluntary revocation. Reinstatement will provide me with the best financial footing to actually pay my restitution, in addition to providing what I feel is a valuable service to the community.
Counsel, how much have you paid so far in regard to the restitution that's owed?
Nearly $200,000.
And what is the total amount of restitution that you owe?
That I wish there was an easy answer for that question. The current amount that is identified on CCAP is some number over $300,000. That number was the product of a stipulation at the trial court level on a cap, which set into motion a whole series of further proceedings that really hasn't resulted in a definitive answer as to what the right number is, and I have honestly struggled to calculate that or get the information that I need.
And I saw that you mentioned that in your brief, that you had struggled to do that accounting. What do you mean by that exactly? What have you done to try to get that accounting of the restitution owed?
I have asked, my initial sentence, Judge Hancher's initial sentence was that there was going to be a cap of the amount that is currently on CCAP as restitution would be the maximum amount of restitution that was owed. and he ordered the Department of Corrections, the probation department, to investigate and determine what the actual amount was, that I would cooperate with probation as they went through that investigation. I immediately met with probation after my sentencing. They send you to the probation office. I met with my initial probation agent, who took one look at me and said, "This is not my job. We do not have the authority to alter your restitution. It is not our job." They brought me back about 2 weeks later, where I met with the chief of the Milwaukee probation office, along with the regional chief and my probation officer, who provided me with case law, memoranda, and others to say, this is not our responsibility. We don't have the legal standing to change your restitution. That's an order that needs to be changed at the trial court level. And they said, good luck to you, but it's not our job.
Right, so the amount of restitution ordered by the court is not the entirety of your restitution obligations. Is that correct?
Based on my own calculations, Your Honor, I believe that I owe about $100,000 less than what is actually on CCAP. For purposes of my reinstatement, I will concede without question that what is the court has ordered is my obligation to pay. I haven't taken any further steps besides reaching out to, obviously, probation. Beyond that, I went back to the trial court and sought an actual restitution hearing, since there was never an actual restitution hearing at the trial court level, and I lost at every level along that way. I did not take that issue up on appeal. Hindsight goggles always being crystal clear, that's probably a step I should have taken.
What have you done outside of that to determine the amount of restitution you owe? I understand from the briefing that you needed access to records from your former law firm. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
What steps have you taken to obtain those records?
I've contacted them numerous times myself. I actually had the Department of Corrections reach out to them, which my agent did on multiple occasions, reached out to the firm, who did not respond at any point. The district attorney's office reached out to the firm, which was completely uncooperative and refused to appear at the restitution hearing, or did not appear at any level or at any stage during my criminal proceedings. My last step, to answer your question, the last thing I've done was during this reinstatement process, one of my requests of the Office of Lawyer Regulation was to request those trust account records in seal under the authority of the Office of Lawyer Regulation, so that I can compare what I have provided as a spreadsheet, which breaks down client by client, which clients I believe were paid back either in cash or other means that I don't have definitive proof of, so that I can compare it to the firm's trust account records to show if they show a zero balance to that client. It would be, that is what I would need in the way of documentation. Obviously, those documents are privileged. I don't have a right to those trust account records myself. Suggestions have been made that I start a civil action and try and subpoena those documents. I'm not in a position to, again, hire outside counsel. It falls well outside of my area of expertise to make those attempts. I don't think that I would be fruitful, which is why part of my request here today is that this court, as one of the conditions in reinstatement, ask that firm through the Office of Lawyer Regulation to produce those trust account records under seal, and I will abide by whatever calculation the Office of Lawyer Regulation, once those records are compared between what I have provided OLR in the way of what I feel has been paid and what the firm's records show, I will abide by whatever that number is. I don't think there's going to be any disagreement between that, and I don't have a basis to disagree with that because I don't have receipts for payments that were made off of the record to clients that were harmed by my actions.
When the court revoked your license to practice, part of the order required the providing accounting to the clients identified in our decision and either pay restitution or settle their claims, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Would we need to amend that decision to reinstate you?
That is my request, sir. Realistically, my goal through this process is to make good on the harm that I caused. The only viable option I have to do that is to reinstate my law license, and through a very structured process, re-entering the practice of law is the only means that I legitimately have to have an earning capacity to make good and make those clients whole. My goal is to not just turn the other way on what I owe. I would like an opportunity to pay my restitution, have an opportunity to pay off the judgments that resulted from my conduct. This is my only real option. In the last 5 years, I've been on over 300 job interviews. I've had over 70 job offers. Only two of them have actually resulted in employment because I have a felony theft from business conviction on my record that A lot of times I get a phone call back that says, we've found a better candidate. But for many of the jobs that I've applied for that I'm more than qualified to have, that's the reality. I am going to be extraordinarily limited. I have five children. I would like to be able to support my family and pay my restitution. This is legitimately my best option to actually make good on the harm that I caused.
What is the amount of the judgment that you have against you?
I'm sorry, could you ask me that?
What is the amount of the judgment from the criminal proceedings?
Roughly $350,000.
Okay, and then is restitution that we're talking about here fully included within that, or is it in addition to or only a part of? How does it fit together?
And I apologize, I misunderstood your question. There are at least two civil judgments that relate, that completely overlap with the restitution issue, which created another issue that I haven't been able to find enough case law or any really standing to resolve that issue, where the clients had sued me personally and taken judgments against me. Those amounts were also included in my restitution. So I've raised to the trial court during some of my post-conviction motions of, who am I paying? Do I need to pay that back to the law firm's trust account, or do I pay that to the client and get a credit towards my restitution? I have not gotten that answer from a trial court during any of my questions. The furthest I got at the trial court level in Milwaukee County, the last time was that the court directed me to cooperate with the district attorney's office. The district attorney's office said, we are not going to even alter anything unless you have definitive documented proof, either in the way of a canceled check or a receipt, to show that you paid these clients, when in fact many of them were paid with cash or paid with checks that I don't have access to get canceled checks from at this point anymore. I don't have that proof, so there was only a nominal amount reduced from that restitution amount because the district attorney's office said it was not their burden to produce the trust account records, which is, I don't disagree with them. It's not their burden. I'm defending.
And your law firm has not been willing to tell you from their records what they believe the amount is and to whom it's due.
That's correct. They have not cooperated. Going back to my actual criminal trial, they were not a party to the criminal action at all. They didn't appear, they didn't produce any documents besides for the initial accounting that they provided the district attorney's office of what was taken out of the trust account. They didn't cooperate at any point beyond that.
Okay.
And you haven't made any direct requests of them. It's just through the probation department and also through I know you wanted OLR to do it, but in terms of you personally making that request, getting a lift of the no contact order to be able to contact the firm directly to ask them about the trust accounts, have you thought about doing that?
Could you ask me the first part of that question? I didn't hear the first part.
I'm asking about your direct requests of the law firm with respect to restitution owed, such that you could make the accounting that you need to make and not relying on the DA's office or probation to make that happen.
Beyond my own request, the only requests that were made were to the trial court, the district attorney's office, the Office of Lawyer Regulation and Probation. I didn't try any other ancillary actions. I didn't start any separate civil matters to try and produce those documents.
Well, without even a civil matter, just making the request to have the no contact order lifted so that you could just make those requests?
The response I received at every level along that was that they're privileged documents and the firm doesn't have to produce them. So to answer your question, no, I didn't make any other requests. At this point, I'm requesting reinstatement of my license with restrictions that would apply, in my opinion, for at least the first 2 years of my practice. The restrictions that I would propose are that I not maintain a trust account. That seemed like a relatively obvious one for me. Number two was that in any case that would involve the need to hold funds in trust, that I'd be required to have co-counsel on those cases that would be responsible for maintaining any funds and devising up the fees from there. Third with that is that I would coordinate with the Office of Lawyer Regulation to identify an acceptable member of the Wisconsin Bar to act as a professional mentor, and I would ask that mentor either report to OLR either on a regular basis or report to OLR if they see any issues with my practice that would be concerning to them. The fourth is that I provide a monthly accounting to the Office of Oil Regulation, documenting fees collected, client names, and the subject matter of their case. And five, that I pay a specified percentage of my fees collected towards my restitution amount.
Counsel, I understand that some of the restitution is owed to your former firm, but also that some is owed to clients while you were in solo practice. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. I believe that is the case, Your Honor, based on the original petition for revocation. The matters that were subject to the original petition would date back to clients that were in solo practice.
And have you calculated the amount due in restitution to those clients you had while in solo practice?
I believe they were identified in the original petition, but I don't have those in my argument, sir. I'm sorry.
Did you provide an accounting with respect to those clients to the OLR?
They were discussed at some point during the process, but I don't dispute those amounts in any way.
But is there, did you, part of the order revoking your license required you to provide an accounting with respect to everyone to whom you owed restitution. So I understand the difficulties you're having with respect to the records from the prior firm, but what I want to know is, did you provide that accounting with respect to the clients that were not part of that firm?
I can't say with absolute certainty that they were. I know those amounts were discussed, but for purposes of this argument, I can't say with absolute certainty that a specific separate document was forwarded to the Office of Lawyer Regulation, but I know that those particular clients that were subject to the original petition were not in dispute, and I have not been able to make payment towards those amounts.
Okay.
I believe at least one of those clients made a claim to the fund, and I know that that would be part of something that I still need to reimburse.
Now, you said you paid $200,000, though.
That went directly to the former firm.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you.
So the clients that date back to solo practice were not any part of that.
So is it feasible for you to do the accounting for with respect to those clients?
Yes, sir. Without a question. Those would not be an issue at all.
And why has that not been done yet?
I can't say with certainty that I didn't. That dates back far enough that I don't recall during the original petition for my voluntary revocation. I know that there were discussions with litigation counsel for the Office of Lawyer Regulation as to what those amounts were when we drafted and I signed my petition for revocation.
Did you submit anything along with your brief in this case that would indicate what, if anything, had been done to provide that accounting?
No, sir. I plan to rebuild a viable legal practice capable of paying my restitution and other obligations is relatively basic as far as my perspective. The reality is I would need to continue my current full-time employment, which is non-legal in nature, since it's going to take what I see as a fair amount of time to rebuild from scratch. My initial plan would be to take part-time contracting work. It's readily available. There's plenty of advertisements for other law firms that need help drafting briefs, making local appearances, doing legal research, doing discovery work. That would be probably the lowest hanging fruit that I'd be able to find immediately that would start at least chipping away, no matter how slow it is, towards my restitution obligations. The next would be to take as much uncomplicated flat fee work that would not require a trust account as I could. Traffic appearances, post-judgment criminal issues, since I become relatively familiar with the process of post-judgment criminal issues, landlord-tenant issues, basic collections matters, matters that fit that category of legal practice. Additionally, the possibility of joint representation in personal injury work or workers' compensation cases is probably the single best opportunity that I have to pay my restitution off as quickly as possible. Over the window of time that I have not had a license, dating back to my time at the House of Corrections, my particular circle of acquaintances, friends, and network has expanded quite a bit. My current position, working for the Wisconsin Gazette, provides me with greater reach than I've had before with respect to potential clients. and the ability to at least jointly represent someone in a case that could generate a sizable fee is probably my single best chance to make good in, you know, in less than a lifetime on what I owe.
Counsel, the OLR suggests perhaps that your character has not been exemplary during this time after the revocation based on the claiming of your children as tax exemptions in an incorrect year. Do you have any response to that?
It was an error. I don't dispute it. I brought that issue directly to the forefront in the hearing. I did my taxes on the computer, clacking away. The prior year was my year to claim all my children. It imported that data. I thought I had made the necessary corrections. As soon as I was given notice of that fact, I corrected it with the state. It was an error. It was as simple as that. There was no intent. There was no... It was an oversight on my part. A sloppy one at best, but I just am not in a position to hire somebody to do my taxes, and it was shoddy work on my part at that exact moment. But sadly, I am in the midst of seeking more time with my children.
Counsel, this is Shirley Abrahamson. Would you please speak right into the microphone so I can hear you clearly? Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. I'm in the middle of a rather contested family court issue involving the placement of my children. It's not something that I necessarily want to outline a great deal on this record, but the reality is it was brought up in the context of my hearing as one of the few people that opposed my reinstatement is my ex-wife. And the issue was raised specifically because there has been discussions off the record of the allegations that she has made and not making those allegations if I would simply dismiss my family court action, which, while my law license is extraordinarily important to me, my children are more important to me, so that wasn't really an option. I thought I did an adequate job during the hearing in front of the referee to outline that fact that, from the standpoint of credibility, family issues are icky. I don't really have much more that I'd like to add about that on this record, but that is a lot of how that unfolded. All of the less than desirable conduct that was really outlined are items that were thrown out by my ex-wife during the reinstatement process.
Very good. Thank you.
My time on probation in the House of Corrections has taught me quite a bit. I guess most importantly, I learned that hitting rock bottom professionally and personally is a dark, dark place. I think I've learned that it also provides you with a very, very solid ground to build from, and I'm hoping that that I'm given that opportunity to make good and make good on what I did wrong. Thank you.
May it please the Court, my name is Jonathan Hendricks, and I am an assistant litigation counsel with the Office of Lawyer Regulation, commonly known as OLR. OLR asks the Court to uphold the referee's findings of fact and adopt his conclusions of law denying reinstatement to Attorney Malarski. The referee found that Attorney Malarski had not met his burden with three factors required for his reinstatement. He did not show by clear, satisfactory, and convincing evidence that, one, he had fully complied with the terms of this court's revocation order, two, that he substantiated the representations in his petition for reinstatement, and three, the referee could not find that the resumption of practice of law by Attorney Malarski would not be detrimental to the administration of justice or subversive of the public interest. And there were essentially three substantive factual areas that the referee used to find those legal conclusions. And before I skip over it, the referee did find that Attorney Malarski had the moral character to practice law in Wisconsin, which is the fourth requirement for reinstatement. Those three factual areas are, as Attorney Malarski discussed in his argument, sort of restitution, this court order related to his divorce, and then the issues related to mentor that the referee cited. And I want to address the restitution issue because I think this is sort of the thorniest issue in this process and perhaps for Attorney Malarski for the past several years. Backing up a second, just a few facts on the timeline here. The final three phases of Attorney Malarski's legal career were he worked for a firm called Kim and Lavoie, then he had a solo practice, and then he joined the Eisenberg firm. And when he left the Eisenberg firm, he left the practice of law. In 2008, OLR filed a disciplinary complaint against Attorney Malarski, and in 2009, Attorney Malarski signed a petition for revocation by consent. Now, that petition included both clients that were in the pending public case, as well as eight additional client matters under investigation by OLR. So a total of 11 client matters were contained in his petition, in which he asserted or promised that he would provide an accounting and make restitution to those people. And then in 2010, this court issued a revocation order related, based on his petition, involving those 11 client matters, and explicitly ordered him to either pay restitution or to settle those claims with his former clients. The disciplinary process, those clients involve, I think, as was previously noted, not just clients of the Eisenberg firm, that final phase of his legal career. Some of his legal representation of those clients included the earlier two phases, while he was at Kim and Lavoie and while he was a solo practitioner. So Attorney Malarski has described in detail, both on the record and here today, his difficulty in getting records from the Eisenberg firm and the related criminal judgment. However, I would ask that you keep in mind that that is a different set of clients. The clients that this court ordered him to make restitution and to provide that accounting are 11 specific people identified in the revocation decision, not the numerous people that he represented at the Eisenberg firm. So in 2010, this court issued that revocation decision and essentially put him on notice that he would, if he wished to reinstate someday, have to provide that accounting and somehow settle those claims. In 2012, as he noted, there was a criminal proceeding started against him in Milwaukee County, to which he ultimately pled guilty to one count. That criminal complaint, which is in the record here, again, deals just with his misappropriation of funds while he was at the Eisenberg firm. And that's the firm to which he paid that $200-some thousand as compensation. And as part of that criminal proceeding, he was ordered to make restitution to that firm's trust account. He has raised issues with the reliability of the Eisenberg firm's numbers in terms of the amount he owes. He did not introduce the spreadsheet that was used in calculating the amount of restitution owed in his criminal proceeding into the reinstatement hearing. He has also raised at hearing and through this process the issuance of a no-contact order preventing him from contacting the Eisenberg firm to sort of determine what the correct amount is that he owes that firm's former clients. Again, that is a different set of people, but Attorney Malarski could have and did not petition the criminal court to have that no-contact order lifted and then ask the referee to issue a subpoena for those records as part of the reinstatement process.
Counsel, yes. Are you owed any documentation with respect to the work done at the Eisenberg firm?
I'm sorry, could you repeat your question?
Yep. Are you owed any documentation, any accounting, based on his activities at the Eisenberg firm?
I believe some of the clients in his revocation petition were clients that he had while at the Eisenberg firm, yes.
Okay.
So it includes presumably the universe of people that he owes restitution to in the Eisenberg firm includes one or more people that he would need to provide restitution for as part of this court's order.
Mr. Malarski has suggested that the Eisenberg firm has asserted privilege with respect to the documents necessary to calculate restitution. Do you have a position on whether those records would be privileged with respect to the OLR?
I believe it will certainly OLR can request records as part of its investigations in terms of disciplinary investigations. In a reinstatement proceeding, our investigations proceed a little bit differently, where we try and gather more information about the respondent as opposed to sort of delving into the facts, because fairly obviously the burden is reversed, where it's his burden to prove things, and we simply try and verify that.
So that much is true. But let's look at this in a very practical way. There is information that he needs in order to fulfill his obligations as required by the revocation order, and it appears that the firm is asserting privilege over the documents necessary to do that. What recourse does he have to get the information necessary to comply with our order?
While OLR is not trying to provide legal advice to Attorney Malarski. Realistically, were we to seek those documents, we would do the same thing that Attorney Malarski could have done, which is ask the referee to issue a third-party subpoena and then deal with whatever privileges that they raised. That is how we would have gathered those documents the same way he would have.
And if such a subpoena were to issue, would the Eisenberg firm have an obligation to cooperate with the OLR or in responding to the subpoena?
Well, they have an obligation to cooperate with us, but to the extent that records, we would be seeking records that would not be people who have grieved against Attorney Malarski or the Eisenberg firm for whatever reason, I'm not certain that we would be able to get access to those. Normally, if somebody, if a client files a grievance against an attorney, we can get, as part of that process, that gives us the ability to get their records from the law firm or the attorney representing them. In this situation,
We're only interested in records related to clients who have grieved, correct?
Right. And I think we would be able to get certainly any of the clients that we had investigated as part of the revocation disciplinary process. I believe we would be able to get those documents. There are a number of other former clients of the Eisenberg firm and Attorney Malarski's that I'm not certain we would be able to get access to, because those people may not have filed grievances with us, and therefore they would not have waived that attorney-client confidentiality.
Nor would they be covered by the restitution order then, correct?
They would not be covered by this court's restitution order. They would presumably be covered by the criminal court's restitution order.
Is there any place that you're aware of a list of the names of the people that are part of the criminal restitution order and the names of the people who were clients at the Eisenberg law firm who are at issue here?
Yes.
Is that in the record before us?
It is not in the record.
Okay.
There is some reference in the record to a spreadsheet. Attorney Malarski, and essentially this spreadsheet was a document that the district attorney's office compiled based on information from the Eisenberg firm, and then with some, I believe, duplications and discussions with Attorney Malarski. And it's my understanding that that provided the basis of the figure for the criminal restitution order. However, Attorney Malarski did not introduce that into evidence at his reinstatement hearing.
Thank you.
So the referee found with regulated to restitution that Attorney Malarski's failure to make restitution to his former clients meant that he had not fully complied with his terms with this court's revocation decision, and that he also had not substantiated some related representations in his petition. Now, regarding the divorce order, Attorney Malarski, his ex-wife did testify at the hearing that she discovered, as he stated in his argument, that one year he did claim their children as exemptions when he was not entitled to. She testified on the record about the impact that had on her. He characterizes this as a mistake. However, the standard which the referee found is that attorneys who seek reinstatement have to allege in their petition that their behavior has been exemplary and above reproach. Simply, even a small error, or in this case, a larger error that impacted a third party, is not an act that is above reproach.
Counsel, are you suggesting that any mistake reflects badly on being above reproach?
No, I'm not saying that any mistake.
All right,
but
so what is the nature of a mistake that would be not above reproach?
Just to pick let's stick to the tax example, for example. Had he put his address, you know, goofed up his social security number or something. You know, it's hard to say. It's not a clear standard. It's whether or not it's above reproach, and the referee found that it was.
Well, yes, but that's a little bit of ipsy-dixit, isn't it?
Yes.
Don't we need to figure out some kind of standard by which we can assign a mistake to a culpable bucket versus a non-culpable bucket? How would we do that?
Well, to the extent that the court's rules of ethics are rules of reason, and I would say, based on that, one could infer or argue, because it's not explicitly stated in this rule, that it's sort of a reasonable standard. Is this a reasonable error or not?
Well, yeah, but that kind of begs the question, doesn't it? A reasonable standard is one to which you can assign a reason.
Yeah.
What would be the reason that we would assign to this being something that's culpable as opposed to non-culpable?
I don't think that I don't have a good answer for you, frankly. And I think the fact that this part of the reinstatement process does not have an intent requirement sort of means that we don't have to delve into whether or not it was a mistake or an intentional act. And I want to be clear, Olar has no reason to believe that it was an intentional act by Attorney Mularski. That's not part of the record. Right. Finally, the last substantive part, the substantive issue that the referee identified was the issue of mentorship, where the referee said that because Attorney Mularski had not identified a potential mentor, that the referee could not find that his resumption of the practice of law would not be detrimental to the administration of justice or subversive of the public interest. And I think that this speaks more broadly to the issues of Attorney Mularski's potential reintegration into the legal profession. At his reinstatement hearing, he did not have any live testimony other than his own. He did have references which he submitted and which OLR had brought as an exhibit. However, he admitted that none of those references, the ones who were attorneys, had ever seen him practice law. He did have some difficulties getting information to OLR by its timelines, which is part of the reason that OLR opposed his petition initially before the reinstatement hearing. And just in general, it appears that it would be hard to say that an attorney is ready for reinstatement when they have difficulty with simple procedures and even putting together a fairly normal civil matter.
As far as the mentor goes, that is someone that wouldn't... I understand that you wanted Mr. Mularski to identify that person now, but is it true that that mentor wouldn't be in place until he was actually reinstated? Otherwise, what are they mentoring, or is there an expectation that they're doing some kind of mentoring prior to that time?
OLR does not have an expectation that attorneys need to identify a mentor before they seek reinstatement. The way this has worked in other cases where this court has decided that a mentor is an appropriate readjustment tool is that the attorney identifies somebody, we would approve it, and then that person meets with Attorney Malarski, and after he would get his license back, or any attorney, and then submit periodic reports to us.
And this happens after reinstatement?
Normally, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
So in conclusion, OLR asked this court to uphold the referee's factual findings and adopt his reasoning that Attorney Malarski is not yet ready for reinstatement. As this court has said, practicing law in Wisconsin is a privilege, and it is one that he has not yet demonstrated that this court should give to him. Thank you.
I only had the one item to clarify, and it was just raised with respect to whether I provided an accounting of amounts that are owed along with the client names with respect to the Eisenberg firm. I have produced that information. It's been readily available at every stage. I didn't actually offer it as an exhibit during my hearing in front of the referee. And my testimony in front of the referee was that I didn't want there to be a situation or an impression in any way that I wasn't taking responsibility for what I owe. And I've struggled with the fact that there's an order in place right now that says I owe restitution. I didn't want to walk into my hearing saying, yeah, I owe restitution, but not what they're saying. I didn't offer that a specific exhibit as part of that hearing. I didn't, at that exact moment, think of the actual impact as we are here today at this stage. The Office of Lawyer Regulation has all of those records. It is a very detailed document with dates, check numbers, client first name, client last name. It is that document that would be the easiest to use in reference to the Eisenberg's trust account records.
I'd appreciate, this is Shirley Abramson, speaking into the microphone loudly and clearly. Thank you.
I apologize. That is the specific document that would most clearly identify what the restitution amount is.
But you know what amount of money you owe to those clients who were your separate clients when you were not with the Eisenberg firm, correct?
That's correct, ma'am. I have record of that. I did not produce a separate accounting for those individual clients because it was included in my original revocation proceeding.
Have you paid any money to those separate clients?
No, ma'am.
Why?
Only there has not been the financial capacity to pay anything towards those clients. Everything has been paid towards the criminal restitution since it was what was immediately in front of me.
Okay.
With respect to mentorship, I'm happy to produce a mentor, if that is the difference. I can't imagine it is, but if that is going to be what hangs in the balance, I will produce the name of multiple mentors that are willing to serve as professional mentors to me to the Office of Lawyer Regulation immediately.
I'm a little confused on the factual record. You mentioned that the accounting with respect to non-Eisenberg clients was a matter of the original revocation proceeding, and that would demonstrate the amount owed. But I'm not sure how that could be because the revocation order required you to produce an accounting.
The numbers from those clients were that actually I owed restitution to for my petition for revocation. Those clients, I believe, had all been paid by the state's fund already by the time I was going through the revocation proceedings.
So is it your position that the order of this court requiring you to provide an accounting did not apply to those clients?
No, the order was very clear from the court. My own impression, Your Honor, was that the court was already aware of those numbers and I had already supplied them to the Office of Lawyer Regulation as part of that revocation proceeding. Since it was part of the records exchange between myself and the Office of Lawyer Regulation, who actually drafted my petition for voluntary revocation. They drafted that document. I had worked jointly with OLR on my own petition for revocation. Since they were aware of those amounts, I did not conceive that I had to provide them a separate accounting beyond what they already had. And that is all I actually have. Thank you very, very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. It's always a difficult case when lawyers come before us, so we appreciate your diligence in briefing and yours as well, counsel, and in the arguments that are provided. The court will adjourn now and reconvene in closed conference at 20 minutes before the hour of 3. Thank you.